Belgravia, London, March 1924. Helena tapped her forefinger into the pot of rouge and rubbed a dot of colour into the apple of one cheek and then the other, just as her sister Amalia had instructed. She was to start with the slightest wash of colour and build from there, rather as she would do when painting, though this was the first time she'd ever applied pigment to her face. She pulled back from her dressing table mirror and surveyed her reflection with an unflinching eye. The rouge had helped to reduce the pallor of her complexion a little, though nothing could be done about the thinness of her face, nor the dark circles that ringed her eyes. Worst of all was her hair, which the doctor had ordered be shorn when her fever refused to break. After 4 months it had scarcely grown at all, and was only just beginning to curl around her ears and nape. It was rather pleasant to be free of the bother of arranging it, at least until it grew back, but she could have done without the sympathetic sighs and half-hidden stares. On the other hand, women everywhere were shingling their hair these days. This was simply a more radical version. It wouldn't do to remind her parents of her illness too forcefully, however, so she wrapped a long scarf around her head, tied it at her nape, and let the ends trail down her back. The effect was rather bohemian, but fetching all the same, and the bright blue of the patterned silk, a gift from her Aunt Agnes, helped to brighten her eyes. The letter from Agnes had arrived a month before, dropping into her lap like a firecracker. 51, Quai de Bourbon, Paris, France, 12th of February, 1924. My dearest Helena, words cannot express my joy when I received your letter of Tuesday last and was able to read, in your very own words, that you have recovered from your illness and are nearly restored to health. Your account was so terribly moving. I have read it through a dozen times already, and it never fails to bring tears to my eyes. I must commend you for your resolution to effect a wholesale change in your life. The past 5 years have been so very difficult for you, and you have borne your sorrows admirably. But it is long past time that you thought of your future, and I think any course of action that takes you away from London is a sound one. I have two suggestions that I hope you will consider. First, I would be very happy if you would come to stay with me in France. You said in your letter that you wished to live. I so love your use of capital letters here, and where better than France for such an endeavour? Second, and let me emphasise that this is a suggestion and not an edict, if you do come to stay, I think it best if you find some way to occupy your days. I live quietly, and I worry that you would quickly find my company boring. But if you have something to do, you will be much happier for it. Given your interest in art and your undeniable talent in that regard, I think you ought to consider a term of study at one of the private academies in Paris. To that end, I have enclosed the brochures for 3 such schools, and it is my fervent hope that you consider enrolling in one of them for the autumn term. I leave for Antibes at the end of this week. Write to me there, no matter what you decide. With affectionate good wishes, Auntie A. Folding the letter away, Helena looked in the mirror one last time. It was time. Her parents weren't expecting her for luncheon. Had she mentioned it during her mother's visit that morning, she'd have been subjected to a visit from Dr. Banks, whom she had grown to detest, and then guided down the stairs by 2 maids at the least. Before she could set her plans in motion, she had to show Mama and Papa that she was fit to rejoin the world, and that began with dressing herself and walking down the stairs without anyone hovering at her elbow. It was only the 3rd or 4th time she'd ventured beyond her bedroom door since the fever had broken and her recovery had begun, and despite herself, she felt rather cowed by the number of stairs she had to descend in order to reach the dining room on the floor below. But she had done it before and would manage it again. One step and another, and finally she was crossing the hall and smiling at Farrow the footman, who looked as if he might faint when he realised she was alone. "Don't worry," she whispered as he opened the door to the dining room. "If they fuss, I'll tell them you helped me." The vast expanse of the dining table was empty, apart from a trio of silvery urns that marked its central leaves, for her parents had chosen to sit at a small table in front of the French doors overlooking the garden. Helena cleared her throat, not wishing to startle them, and braced herself as their expressions of delight turned to concern.